2012 marks the 100th anniversary of an extraordinary year in presidential politics. Today, it would seem odd, if not crazy and illegal, for a two-term president, say if Bill Clinton or George W. Bush, ran for a third term as the candidate of a third party. But that's exactly what Theodore Roosevelt did. In 1912, Theodore Roosevelt ran for president not as a Republican or a Democrat, but as the candidate of a new progressive party. The program you are about to hear looks back at Theodore Roosevelt's career and how the issues he raised in the 1912 presidential campaign are still at the center of today's political debates. This documentary is a joint production of Prairie Public and the Theodore Roosevelt Center at Dickinson State University. I'm Meg Luther Lindholm. During his 1912 presidential campaign, Theodore Roosevelt outlined a vision of government that was as bold as he was. He wanted to steer the country in a new direction, one where he, and by extension the federal government, would do more to make a difference in people's lives. Clay Jenkinson is the Roosevelt Scholar at the Theodore Roosevelt Center at Dickinson State University.
I think he thought, if it weren't that I'm Theodore Roosevelt, this would be a dumb thing to try to do. But because I'm Theodore Roosevelt, you know what? I might just pull it off.
He created the Progressive Party and then ran as its candidate to speak for people who felt left out of the political system.
People who had never been taken seriously, you know, people who believed in the 8-hour day or who believed in minimum wage or workman's compensation or a certain type of old age pension. These people had been laboring through their lives with almost no traction.
These ideas were seen as socialistic and coddling and so forth.
Nancy Unger is a historian at Santa Clara University.
In the reality of how people really were living and what was happening in their lives, these aren't radical ideas anymore. And the Progressive Party, I think, really helps to get more and more people to see that.
He didn't think what third-party candidates often think. I'll lose, but I'm going to push the debate in a certain direction, or I'll influence the country that it has to take my ideas seriously. He didn't think that. He wasn't in it to lose. He was in it to win. And he thought he could win. And I think it really broke his heart when he didn't win.
Roosevelt served two terms as a Republican president. Then, after taking a few years off, he decided he wanted his old job back. The Progressive Party he founded in 1912 came to be known as the Bull Moose Party, after Roosevelt declared that he felt fit as a bull moose to run again. One of Roosevelt's central messages in 1912 was that the country needed democracy with a big D, that the political process should be much more open, not subject to control by big money. Audio recording was new, and Roosevelt was one of the first politicians to take advantage of it. What you are about to hear is Theodore Roosevelt on the campaign trail in 1912, making the case for the common people to govern themselves.
The great fundamental issue now before our people can be stated briefly. It is, are the American people fit to govern themselves, to rule themselves, to control themselves? I believe they are. My opponents do not. I believe in the right of the people to rule. I believe that the majority of the plain people of the United States will, day in and day out, make fewer mistakes in governing themselves than any smaller class or body of men, no matter what their training, will make in trying to govern.
Theodore Roosevelt's decision to run for re-election in 1912 was not a whim or the simple desire for the limelight. His decision grew out of all the years he spent writing, observing, and learning about people's lives through the lens of politics. Roosevelt's political career spanned 4 decades. During that time, his thinking about government's role in people's lives changed dramatically. He inherited a strong moral streak from his father, whom he worshipped. That moral streak was to guide him throughout his political career. He started out believing in the free market's ability to regulate itself. But over time, his thinking changed. He came of political age when 50% of Americans lived in poverty. Cities like New York and Chicago were being transformed by immigrants pouring in from Europe.
They were living in abject poverty, in squalid housing tenements, without any advocates who are able to bring about policy changes to face this new demographic. These great corporations like Standard Oil and U.S. Steel and the coal companies and the railroads were employing millions of workers, but they were treating them with not even minimal respect.
Roosevelt became president in 1901 after William McKinley was assassinated at the World's Fair in Buffalo, New York. Over the two terms of his presidency, he championed what became known as the Square Deal.
The principles for which we stand are the principles of fair play and a square deal for every man and every woman in the United States. A square deal politically, a square deal in matters social and industrial.
While he was president, Roosevelt grew increasingly frustrated with the lack of concern on all levels of government for people who felt left out of the nation's political system and prosperity. He felt that the people needed more of a voice.
He certainly was never a socialist in any meaningful sense of the term, and he hated radical solutions to political problems. But he realized that the old Republican Party, the party of J.P. Morgan and the Rockefellers and Wall Street, was incapable of even seeing the depths of poverty and the hopelessness of America's urban populations.
And urban folks weren't the only ones struggling. Farmers in the Midwest also had grievances.
The foremost issue is this issue of railroads.
Nancy Unger is a historian at Santa Clara University and author of Fighting Bob La Follette, the Righteous Reformer.
You know, you're not going to be taking your crops by wagon anymore. Railroads are absolutely key, and yet railroads are charging these all the market will bear prices that are just really grinding the farmers into dust. And so there's problems there. There's problems with trying to buy the new farm machinery and all kinds of interest rate issues and so forth. So many farmers are feeling that they feed the nation, and yet they're not being respected, and it's virtually impossible for them to make any kind of profit.
Robert La Follette was a strident reformer who served first as governor, then senator of Wisconsin in the early 1900s. Fighting Bob, as he was known, was keenly aware of the struggles faced by farmers in the Midwest. But his larger goal was to establish a more open democracy, one that would allow all Americans, including women, to vote for the politicians of their choice. Over time, his name became synonymous with the progressive movement. But that movement didn't become truly national in scope until Theodore Roosevelt took up its cause.
Political parties exist to secure responsible government and to execute the will of the people. Instead of instruments to promote the general welfare, they have become the tools of corrupt interests which use them impartially to serve their selfish purposes. Behind the ostensible government sits enthroned an invisible government, owing no allegiance and acknowledging no responsibility to the people. To destroy this invisible government, to dissolve the unholy alliance between corrupt business and corrupt politics, is the first task of the statesmanship of the day.
When Roosevelt left the presidency in 1908, he and most everyone else assumed it was for good. After all, he had promised when reelected in 1904 not to seek a third term.
He later said, "I've only regretted that decision once, every day for the rest of my life."
He traveled widely after he left office, and what he learned in Europe amazed him. Germany had old age pensions. England, Norway, Sweden, and France were all enacting social safety nets for their most vulnerable citizens.
And so Roosevelt comes back from Europe realizing that we're behind. And for Roosevelt, who is a hyper-competitive person and a lover of America beyond all other things, the idea that we could be behind Europe in the basic welfare of our societies upset him.
It was a hot day in Kansas in the summer of 1910 when Theodore Roosevelt stood on top of a kitchen table to give a speech that gave his audience of 30,000 a rousing taste of his new political orientation. It has been called the most radical speech of his career. It was also the opening shot in his 1912 bid to be president once more. We don't have a recording of the speech, but we do have Clay Jenkinson to say a part of it.
No man can be a good citizen unless he has a wage more than sufficient to cover the bare cost of living, and hours of labor short enough so that after his day's work is done, he will have time and energy to bear his share in the management of the community, to help in carrying the general load. We keep countless men from being good citizens by the conditions of life by which we surround them. We need comprehensive workmen's compensation acts, both state and national laws to regulate child labor and work for women. And especially, we need in our common schools not merely education and book learning, but also practical training for daily life and work. We need to enforce better sanitary conditions for our workers and to extend the use of safety appliances for workers in industry and in commerce, both within and between the states.
The election of 1912 was a political roller coaster for Roosevelt. Although he disliked the corporate dominance over his party, he still considered himself a Republican, and he ran to be the Republican nominee. His popularity with the American people gave him hope.
Wherever he would go to give the merest speech, there would be 5,000, 10,000, sometimes 25,000 people. And this was a time when automobiles were scarce. People would come in on their buggies and take 3 or 4 days to get to the place. He was royalty. He was America's first world historical figure.
And the people would have more of a voice in this election. State primaries were happening for the first time. In March of 1912, North Dakota had the distinction of being the first state ever to hold a primary. Despite his having been a cattle rancher out west, Roosevelt lost North Dakota to Bob La Follette. However, he won 12 of the remaining 13 primaries. But he hit a wall of opposition at the Republican Party convention. Historian Nancy Unger.
Taft really controls the Republican Party machinery, and there's enough there that that he is able to get the nomination. And that is when Theodore Roosevelt says, well, he feels fit as a bull moose, and he's going to have his own party. And so that's when the Progressive Party with a capital P, the very specific Progressive Party, is born in 1912.
The Progressive Party convention was a jubilant and raucous affair. Large numbers of women were among the thousands who came to see Roosevelt chosen as the nominee of this new party.
It was very exciting. It was absolutely packed. There were thousands of people there.
And it was the most fervent and idealistic and emotional political convention in American history.
Women are going crazy over this because he's really bringing women in ways that nobody else has ever done before.
Jane Addams, who founded Hull House in Chicago, was the first woman in American history to nominate a candidate for president. The crowd was rapt as she spoke.
The new party has become the American exponent of a worldwide movement toward juster social conditions, a movement which the United States, lagging behind other great nations, has been unaccountably slow to embody in political action. I second the nomination of Theodore Roosevelt because he is one of the few men in our public life who has been responsive to the social appeal and who has caught the significance of the modern movement. Because of that, because the program will require a leader of invincible courage, of open mind, of democratic sympathies, one endowed with power to interpret the common man and to identify himself with the common lot, I heartily second the nomination.
Then Theodore Roosevelt took the stage to accept the nomination.
To you, you, men and women who have come here to this great city of this great state formally to launch a new party. A party of the people, of the whole Union, the National Progressive Party. I extend my hearty greeting. You are taking a bold and greatly needed step for the service of our beloved country. The old parties are husks, with no real soul within either, divided on artificial lines, boss-ridden, and privilege-controlled, each a jumble of incongruous elements, and neither daring to speak out wisely and fearlessly what should be said on the vital issues of the day.
Roosevelt left the convention feeling uplifted by the people's spirit and the righteousness of his cause. But there wasn't much time, money, or staff to propel his 3-month sprint to Election Day. And, in what was almost a fatal blow, a would-be assassin shot him at close range during a campaign stop in Milwaukee. The bullet tore through the 50-page speech and the glasses case in his coat pocket before coming to a stop in his chest. Fortunately, his vital organs were spared, and he went on to give his 80-minute speech. He said it would take more than a bullet to kill a bull moose. The bullet remained lodged inside him for the rest of his life. Now you'll hear Roosevelt responding to a speech that Woodrow Wilson, the Democratic candidate, gave in South Dakota. Roosevelt charges that Wilson is more interested in protecting the interests of factory owners than the people, including the children, that they employ.
The liberty of which Mr. Wilson speaks today means merely the liberty of some great trust magnate to do that which he is not entitled to. It means merely the liberty of some factory owner to work haggard women over hours for underpay and himself to pocket the proceeds. It means the liberty of even less conscientious factory owners to make their money out of the toil, the labor of little children.
In the end, Theodore Roosevelt lost the election to Woodrow Wilson, the Democratic candidate. But he outperformed William Taft, who was the president and the Republican candidate. And he won more votes than any third-party candidate in American history. Progressive candidates continued to run for office after Roosevelt lost in 1912. But World War I shifted the nation's focus away from debates over domestic policy towards events overseas. With Roosevelt's death in 1919 at the age of 60, the movement lost its most effective leader. It took the Great Depression to breathe new life into the progressive agenda, and the debate over government's role in people's lives has continued down to the present day.
FDR was able to legislate into action many of the ideals that Roosevelt had articulated in 1910.
So the Progressive Party, in some ways, sort of lost the battle but won the war. That's their most important legacy.
And so the elections of 1912 and 2012 are similar in this sense that we're trying to wrestle with who we really are as a nation.
There's still this big debate. If we are talking about various social programs, is this what we owe American citizens? To give them, you know, a decent life, and we're going to share the wealth, and this is really part of what makes our country great? Or are we destroying private enterprise initiative? Are we coddling people? I mean, this was a fight that they were having in 1912, and here we are in 2012 still having this fight.
But I think that we are actually debating whether we want to complete the progressive agenda once and for all, or whether we went too far and we want to stall it out and retreat. And I think the jury is still out about this.
My thanks to Clay Jenkinson and Nancy Unger, who participated in the 2012 Theodore Roosevelt Symposium at Dickinson State University. Thanks also to Carrie Winterstein, a.k.a. Jane Addams, and to Eric Volk and Bill Thomas for their production help. You can learn more about Theodore Roosevelt and hear his speeches by going online to www.theodoreroosevelt.org. This program was a co-production of Prairie Public and the Theodore Roosevelt Center at Dickinson State University. I'm Meg Luther Lindholm.